This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli military clash with peaceful Palestinian demonstrators in the occupied West Bank amid protests against Israeli land grab policy. Iraqi protesters gather outside the Green Zone in Baghdad to condemn Washington's interference in their country's internal matters. And Hollywood actors join writers in an ongoing strike to demand an increase in pay and better working conditions, a double strike unprecedented in decades. Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to World News. Our top story: across the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces have once again attacked Palestinians protesting the regime's land grab policy. At least six people were injured in one of the rallies in the city of Qalqilya. And earlier, our correspondent in Ramallah, Moni Kandil, told us more about the Israeli violence.
Every week, Palestinians in several areas across the occupied West Bank perform the Friday prayers at their land. Threatened by the Israeli forces of confiscation, or even lands had been confiscated. This is what happened in the village of Kufr Qaddoum in Qalqilya, northern the occupied West Bank. Palestinians performed the Friday prayers and protested the confiscation of their lands and the building of the settlements there. But following the prayers, and they started a protest against the Israeli practices, Israeli forces raided the village of Kufr Qaddoum and used their live ammunition to disperse the protesters. According to Palestinian paramedics, at least six Palestinians had been wounded during this aggression by the Israeli forces. In another area in the occupied West Bank today, and also following the Friday prayers, the Israeli forces prevented the residents of Salfit, or East Salfit. Palestinians wanted to perform their Friday prayers at their lands threatened of confiscation by the Israeli forces. However, the Israeli troops raided the village of Deristia, this time West Salfit, attacked the Palestinian worshippers and forced them not to enter their lands there in Deristia. This is why dozens of Palestinians performed their Friday prayers at the entrance to Deristia. And following the prayers, again, the Israeli forces attacked the people, and a number of them had been wounded, according to Palestinian paramedics there.
Now, anti-U.S. sentiments once again flare in Iraq. People take to the streets in Baghdad to condemn U.S. assassination plots and interference in the country's internal affairs. We took a closer look at this issue in our news review program. News Review, where we look deeper into some of the top stories of the day. In this segment of the program, people in Baghdad have held a protest to condemn U.S. assassination plots and interference in Iraq's internal affairs. The outraged protesters gathered outside the Green Zone that houses the U.S. Embassy. They chanted slogans such as, "The U.S. is the great Satan," amid high security presence. The protest was held amid recent reports that the U.S. plans to assassinate the leaders of anti-terror resistance groups in Iraq, particularly the Harakat-e Hezbollah al-Nujaba. Washington is reportedly accusing the group of being behind a deadly drone attack on U.S. forces in neighboring Syria in March. The protesters also blame the U.S. for the crises gripping the country, particularly in the energy sector. Anti-U.S. sentiment has been growing in Iraq since 2020, when Washington assassinated Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the deputy head of the Iraqi anti-terror popular mobilization units, along with Iran's top anti-terror commander, General Qasem Soleimani, in Baghdad. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have human rights activist Mohsen Naghvi, who's joining us from Houston, Texas. Also, we have editor of Veterans Today, Mike Harris, who's joining us from Phoenix. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Naghvi in Houston. Give us your perspective on the recent anti-U.S. protests that have once again emerged in the Iraqi capital, Baghdad.
Well, as we all know, that this was bound to happen. It's been about 3 years now since Sheikh Qasem Soleimani was illegally assassinated by the U.S. on the orders of Donald Trump, and the leader of the Popular Mobilization Forces, Shahid Mehdi al-Muhandis, was also targeted in that same attack by the U.S. government. This goes on to show that the sentiment that the Iraqis have towards the U.S. government haven't really changed. And the false narrative that the U.S. has been building, that the resistance forces in Iraq, which is the Hashd al-Shaabi, the Popular Mobilization Forces, are responsible for the death and the killings of security personnel in Syria, is absolutely false. It has been rejected by the resistance forces, by Hashd al-Shaabi in Iraq. So these protests, these chants against the U.S. government are basically a reflection of the atrocities that the U.S. empire has committed against the Iraqis. This is not a culmination of a few events that have happened over the past, but this consistent stance that the Iraqis have against the U.S. government or against the U.S. military is because of the occupation and the distress that they have faced at the hands of the U.S. government since the early 2000s up till today.
Mike Harris, one last question to you. Has the U.S.'s presence, specifically in the Middle East, its agenda, has it been a failure? Iraqis want America out. Syrians want America out. And we cannot forget the fiasco that happened in Afghanistan.
Well, American foreign policy in the Middle East has been an unmitigated failure. Unmitigated. We have accomplished nothing except alienate the entire world. Our government has been seized by a foreign powers, and that is Zionism, has come into our government and taken over. We no longer are a democratic republic. We no longer have fair and free elections, as we witnessed in the last election theft in 2018, 20, and 22. And so we're no longer a free country. We no longer have a voice in our own government. We want out of this. We want a new government in our own country. But we're not allowed to get there with the process that we have. And so, like I said, the policy of the U.S. has been an unmitigated failure. And I hope that these Zionists who control us learn something from this and stop exposing endless waste of American lives and the lives of any country that the U.S. engages. Because right now in Ukraine, the U.S. is causing the slaughter of thousands and thousands of Ukrainian men. Why? It doesn't benefit us in any way. It serves no good purpose. It didn't serve any good purpose in Iraq. It served no good purpose in Afghanistan. This does not benefit the American people or the American way of life any way whatsoever. The only people who benefit are the Zionists, and those are the ones who must be stopped, and must be stopped on a global basis, around the world, simultaneously if possible. We cannot allow them any quarter and no refuge anywhere. They are the enemy of all humanity.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen. I'm also now a human rights activist joining us from Houston, Texas, and editor of Veterans Today, Mike Harris, joining us from Phoenix. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review, but stick around, there's plenty more to come.
Welcome back, everyone. Hollywood actors have joined writers in an ongoing strike to demand an increase in pay and better work conditions. Some 160,000 performers stopped work Thursday night after negotiations with studios failed. The union, known as the Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, is also demanding assurances that the work will not be replaced by artificial intelligence. The strike by screenwriters started back in May. A double strike by actors and writers is unprecedented since the 1960s. The work stoppage is expected to escalate economic damage to studios and further disrupt scores of American shows and movies. Our Washington, D.C. correspondent Colin Campbell tells us more about the grievances and demands by actors and writers.
Obviously, this serves as a major interruption for entertainment here in the United States, as many new shows will not be aired or produced because they simply don't have the actors to act in them. And, of course, this includes some of the big-name actors in the entertainment world here in the U.S., including Meryl Streep, the president of the SAG-AFTRA, the union that is causing the protest, is led by Fran Drescher. She did that show called The Nanny several years ago that was in syndication. And she said, even from just the way that the tiered structure of payment is created, she's not getting as much money as she normally would. She says that right now, it's very hard for actors to make a living based on the model that producers have created for actors and actresses going forward. And one of the things they're looking at, and it's not just artificial intelligence, but also streaming, where a show can be created and then streamed on multiple platforms without giving any of the royalties to the actors involved in the production. And so what actors want is a different tiered structure that takes into account the multiple streaming platforms that shows can air on, but also they want to protect their intellectual property, which can be the likeness of their image, including their face, their body, and of course their voice. With the emergence of artificial intelligence, the implications are massive, right? You can duplicate someone's voice and still create some type of movie or production, even if the actual actor is not the one who is voicing the material.
Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi has wrapped up his three-nation African tour with a visit to Zimbabwe, where two sides signed 12 memorandums of understanding to strengthen bilateral ties. Raisi visited Kenya and Uganda earlier in the week. He described Africa as a continent of capacity and potential, saying stronger cooperation will benefit the advancement of both Iran and Africa.
Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi has concluded a tour of Africa. During his trip, President Raisi visited Kenya, Uganda, and Zimbabwe. In the Kenyan capital of Nairobi, President Raisi oversaw, along with his Kenyan counterpart, William Ruto, the signing of five memoranda of understanding. Raisi said that Iran is ready to cooperate with Kenya in the fields of petrochemicals, agriculture, science, technology, medicines, and medical equipment, as well as the fishery industry and the fight against narcotics. The Iranian chief executive also described his trip as a turning point in bilateral relations, noting that it can create a good market for Iranian products in Kenya and in East Africa. It further emphasized that the ties between Iran and Kenya would not be limited to their borders.
We have historic cooperation with the African continent and Kenya, and believe that relations between the governments and people of Iran and Kenya can expand further. Our goal is to expand cooperation by tenfold.
It is a special privilege to host President Raisi in Nairobi, and his presence is testimony to the strong ties between Kenya and Iran. It is also a demonstration of our shared commitment to cooperate for the benefit of the people of our two countries.
In Uganda, President Raisi called for expanding and strengthening relations with Uganda in various fields. Raisi, accompanied by a high-ranking delegation, was officially received by the Ugandan President Museveni at his presidential palace in Kampala. President Raisi called for the development of closer economic ties between the nations and noted that friendly countries need to work together to develop raw materials into value-added products. The two sides also inked 4 cooperation documents. President Raisi visits Zimbabwe in the last leg of his African tour. Raisi said Iran and Zimbabwe have great capacities that can be used in the promotion and development of relations and cooperation between the two countries. The two countries signed a number of MOUs to boost trade. In March, Raisi hosted a meeting with a group of representatives from West Africa, in which he pitched Iran as a different kind of partner when compared with countries in the West with colonial histories in the continent. The trip comes a month after Raisi embarked on a tour of Latin America, where he signed a host of agreements to boost ties with fellow U.S. sanctioned allies Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua.
Iran's view on Africa is quite different from that of neocolonialism or its older version. We seek to transfer technology to Africa and empower the continent. African leaders and their people are now quite sensitive on protecting their independence. This is among commonalities between Iran and African nations. Another issue of equal importance for Iran and Africa is the U.S. sanctions regime. With Africa's assistance, we should prevent the U.S. and certain states that still have a colonial mindset from utilizing the deadly tool of sanctions against nations.
A tour is expected to boost trade between Iran and African nations. Iran's trade with Africa is set to increase to over $2 billion a year, up from about $1.2 billion in recent years. Raisi's African tour is the first by an Iranian president since 2013. Now, Africa is home to over 18% of the world's population, and it's very rich in natural resources.
President Raisi's trip to Africa is the first such visit to the continent in 11 years. His visit is primarily aimed at boosting Iran's foreign trade in a region with an economy of $600 billion. Iran exported $1.2 billion worth of goods and services, including petrochemical products, food, medicine, and engineering and technical services to Africa last year. The amount was still not high enough, despite it being an improvement on recent years. Iran, after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, embarked on renewing relations with the African people based on Islam's prohibition of racism. The policy of strengthening relations with Africa continued during the terms of the next Iranian president, who paid 41 visits to Africa in total. Trade between Iran and Africa increased between 2005 and 2006, but the global financial crisis and cruel sanctions imposed on the Islamic Republic under UN Security Council resolution in 2007 decimated it. Iran expects trade with Africa to hit $10 billion in the next 3 years. Africa is home to 18% of the world's population. With an increase in population growth, it sits on some 30% of the world's mineral reserves, 65% of the world's arable land, and 10% of China's freshwater source. It is rich in natural resources, with abundant arable land, water, oil, natural gas, minerals, forests, and wildlife. Experts believe the global economy requires Iran to interact with any opportunities on an international scale and to improve its foreign currency incomes.
And that's a wrap for your latest, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today we explain to you the last six ayahs of Surah Mulk, the number 67 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. It was revealed in Mecca and opens with the sentence, "Blessed is he in whose hands is all sovereignty," thus deriving its name from divine sovereignty or mulk in practice. It is also called blessed from the opening word tabarak. This surah challenges the disbelievers with declarations of God's infinite power over them and over everything else in the world, in afterlife, and in the universe, by focusing on the marvelous and orderly system of creation. It also describes the regret that disbelievers will express on the day of resurrection. It is highly recommended to recite Surah Mulk every night. We start from where we left you last week, and here are ayahs 25, 26, and 27.
قُلْ إِنَّمَا الْعِلْمُ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ وَإِنَّمَا أَنَا نَذِيرٌ مُّبِينٌ فَلَمَّا رَأَوْهُ زُلْفَةً سِيئَتْ وُجُوهُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا وَقِيلَ هَذَا الَّذِي كُنْتُمْ بِهِ تَدَّعُونَ.
The unbelievers mockingly say, "When will this promise of resurrection be fulfilled? Should you be truthful?" Say, "O Prophet, its knowledge is only with Allah, and I am only a manifest warner." When they see it, punishment of the day of resurrection brought near, the faces of the unbelievers will be distorted, and they will be told, "This is what you used to ask for." If you remember, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last Friday, we said no power can stand against the will of the Almighty Creator, which means, without the least doubt, Allah has the power to revive the dead, since it is He who, in the first place, created us from nothing and provided us with all amenities. The ayahs which we recited to you now are expression of doubts by those who lack belief in the facts and realities of creation and raise absurd questions regarding the day of resurrection and the final judgment. They ask prophets to tell them the exact time of resurrection, and in reply are told that the mission of the prophets is only to warn and guide mankind to the path of truth. None except the Almighty Creator knows the exact time of that inevitable occurrence. On being resurrected, those who had died in the state of disbelief and denial will be horrified at the approach of the terrible punishment, whose very sight will make their faces discolored and distorted. They will be told This is the reality in which they used to deny by mocking at the prophets and saints and telling them if divine punishment exists, then make us see it. These ayahs teach us that, number one, lack of knowledge of the reality of resurrection is no reason to deny it. Number two, the mission of the prophets was to convey the message of Allah by warning of the consequence of disbelief and giving tidings to believers. And number three, on the day of resurrection and final judgment, the unbelievers will be horrified at the sight of the approaching punishment they used to deny. Now let us listen to ayahs 28 and 29 of the same surah.
قُلْ أَرَأَيْتُمْ إِنْ أَهْلَكَنِيَ اللَّهُ وَمَنْ مَعِيَ أَوْ رَحِمَنَا فَمَنْ يُجِيرُ الْكَافِرِينَ مِنْ عَذَابٍ أَلِيمٍ قُلْ هُوَ الرَّحْمَنُ آمَنَّا بِهِ وَعَلَيْهِ تَوَكَّلْنَا فَسَتَعْلَمُونَ مَنْ هُوَ فِي ضَلَالٍ.
Say, tell me whether Allah destroys me and those with me, or He has mercy on us. Who will shelter the unbelievers from a painful punishment? Say to them, He is the All-Beneficent. We have faith in Him, and in Him do we trust. Soon you will know who is in manifest error. The pagan Arabs and the hypocrites, who were Muslims in name only and not at heart, conjectured that though their plots and armed attacks have failed, Islam will be no more when the Prophet passes away. Here, the unbelievers are told that whatever happens to the Prophet and his followers, the fate of the faithless is sealed and there is no escape for them from divine punishment, both in this world and on the day of resurrection. As for the faithful or the true believers who are obedient to Allah, the All-Beneficent, they will receive rewards for their sincere service to Islam and mankind. While the unbelievers will realize it is they who have been in manifest error. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, the enemies of Islam desire the death and destruction of the believers, but they cannot do anything in view of the fact that the will of Almighty Allah is superior to all and everything, which means there is no escape from punishment for the disbelievers. Number two, faith means having trust in Allah, submission to His will, and fulfillment of divine commandments, because it is He who is the All-Beneficent Creator, who expects goodness and virtue from the creation. And number three, it will be too late for the unbelievers to realize the facts and avoid divine punishment from which there is no escape on the day of resurrection. In conclusion of this week's episode, which marks completion of the explanation of Surah Mulk as well, here is Ayah 30.
قُلْ أَرَأَيْتُمْ إِنْ أَصْبَحَ مَاؤُكُمْ غَوْرًا فَمَنْ يَأْتِيكُمْ بِمَاءٍ مَعِينٍ.
Say, tell me, should your water sink down into the ground? Who will bring you running water? This is a pointer to a great divine sign. The water needed by mankind for survival is through wells, springs, rivers, and lakes. Rainfall, after refreshing the environment, reviving agriculture, and filling reservoir, seeps into the ground, which is made up of two different layers, permeable and impermeable. The permeable layer absorbs water, while the impermeable layer saves it for the benefit of mankind to be procured through digging wells and drilling deep holes. If the entire earth was permeable, rainwater would sink down to the lowest depth out of reach of mankind. And if it were entirely impermeable, water would remain underground, flooding cities and turning into vast marshlands, thereby making life miserable for human beings. It is only Allah, the Almighty Creator, who provides water through rainfall and preservation of it underground at reachable levels. From this ayah, we learn that, number one, a true believer does not regard material bounties as permanent and knows that at any time these will end, which means the real bounty is faith in the Almighty Creator and obedience to His commandments. And number two, it is obvious that those who do not believe in God have no one to beseech for rains in case of drought. Dear listeners, goodbye and God bless you until we meet again next Friday by presenting you explanation of the next surah titled Qalam or Pen.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in His image, then placed the world in His care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movies with religious themes. One of that movies with a religious theme, very strong one, was Fatima, produced in 2020, directed by Marco Pantacorvo, that we try to criticize from the last episode onwards with Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the podcast.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Again, grateful to be here, Brother Jawad.
It's a pleasure to have you as well as Sayyid Abdullah. Greetings, Sayyid Abdullah.
Greetings to you too, my friend.
Thank you very much. Well, let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Fatima, produced in 2020, and then we'll be back with this criticism.
She's always had a bright imagination, but she seems to have gone too far. And I've already told you, it is a sin to tell lies. It goes against God. Now tell the truth and ask for forgiveness.
It is no lie. We saw her, and she told us to come back to see her again.
When is this going to end? I'm sorry.
Why don't we agree for now and accept that what you are saying is the truth? How can you be so sure that the lady you saw was the Virgin Mary?
I just do.
You know, Lucia, someone might have wanted to play a trick on you. Or worse, it could have been the devil. Sometimes the devil likes to tempt young souls like yours. He often disguises himself, at times even through reassuring shapes, as a way to hide his evil.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Syed Abdullah and Bradley Asser, my guest speakers. We tried to listen to this part of the movie, Fatima, and let me ask a question which is relevant to this part. With you, Brother Yasser, let me start this episode. When her mother, along with his father and the priest, of course, don't believe her vision, the vision of that Lucia, the oldest of the children, actually saw on that day, and later on, of course, the vision gets repeated of Virgin Mary. That vision, the father suggests that she might be deceived by a devil. Can the devil take the shape or form of an angel or a holy figure, Brother Yasser, to trick or to tempt people?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Again, for example, what these children actually saw may not have been either of the blessed ladies. It may have been another figure, another, whatever it may be, another being. But they took it to be. And it's amazing that, I remember I was speaking to a teacher about this once, that in the Islam, for us, this is something that I'll mention quickly, in the Islamic tradition, in order to prove the purity of Zahra salamu alayha, we use the ayat that involve the Bibi Maryam salamu alayha in the glorious Quran. But here again, these children saw what they thought was Bibi Maryam salamu alayha, but they named the Sati Fatima.
Yes.
So there's, you know, it's just a go figure.
Yeah.
Go figure moment.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, to the question you asked, of course, if you remember, we spoke about this one of our previous episodes. First of all, the devil or the Iblis cannot take the form of a blessed individual.
Or an angel.
Oh, anything is blessed.
Uh-huh.
Right? Angel's another story altogether. Whether they have a form or not, it's something completely different. But anything that is blessed, for example, of an imam, of a saint, or a sage. But the problem is this. For example, this is I mentioned this in the previous time as well. The hadith says, if a person sees me, the Holy Prophet, if a person sees me in his dream, he has saw me. Problem is this. I have never seen the Holy Prophet before in my life. Right. How do I know what he looks like? No, have you? No, has.
Yeah.
Maybe say it has. I don't know. But we have not seen the Holy Prophet. We have not seen Imam Ali alayhi salam. We have not seen Imam Ridha alayhi salam. We have not seen Isa alayhi salam. We have not seen Musa alayhi salam in the flesh. We have kind of images of what they may have looked like. So if the devil comes in an image and in that particular image claims that he is a particular individual, it's possible for him to do that.
Yes.
Why? Because we do not...
Because he's a deceiver.
Yes, he's a deceiver. And we do not know how the prophet looks like.
Right.
We do not know how that particular sage, unless we've saw the sage. Like, for example, it's again a very hypothetical example. For example, the devil or a demon comes in a dream or... Also understand that these mukashifats or these unveilings are not dream states. They are real. We have it in mysticism and Gnosticism.
Yes.
These are real states. The person is awake and seeing this. And what's beautiful about the movie is that the three girls saw and others didn't. And the two girls heard and the boy didn't.
Yeah.
This itself, we have this in Islamic tradition, but it's a whole pass on Islamic mysticism and stuff. We don't want to get into it.
Yes.
It's very beautiful though.
Yeah.
But in this particular instance where... If, for example, the devil came in the form of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, I will know Imam Khomeini, and I will know that this is not Imam Khomeini, because I've seen Imam Khomeini. I've seen pictures, I've seen him on TV, and so on and so forth. You have, and so on and so forth. But maybe, you know, 50 years down the line, when the image of Imam Khomeini is not there, or to a person who hasn't seen him, the devil comes and claims to be Imam Khomeini, yes, it's possible for him to do that, to deceive that person. because we haven't seen who the prophet looked like. Oh,
so is there any way of verification of such stories or events?
First of all, it's very difficult. It's one of those aspects of faith.
Can we say, like, from what they say, for example, if it is positive, then it should be something
good. The results of that thing, yes, you can say from the results that occurred to you. But uh-huh. again, that also, we have to be very careful.
Uh-huh.
As you rightly said, the devil is a deceiver, right?
Mm-hmm.
We see in other places where, for example, when the devil wants to trick somebody, there will be a time where results will be positive. Why? To gain trust. Mm-hmm. What happens? You gain trust of that person.
They say the devil is in the details.
Exactly. Very detailed.
Yeah.
And we have said that, like, the devil knows you better than you know yourself. This is not a joke.
Yeah.
This is real.
Yeah.
The devil knows you better than you know yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he will go to those places where he knows he can catch you. Mm-hmm. That's his job, in inverted commas. That's his job, right?
Exactly.
So he's going to deceive you any way possible. First of all, just to gain your trust. In religion, we have a fight against this. In religious texts,
mm-hmm.
the basic and most simple one is what? Is that in your acts of worship, in your ibadat, what do? You are told to ignore all of your doubts.
Mm-hmm.
Why? It gives you that thing to stop those what's called whispers
mm-hmm.
to come in. Any doubt you have in salah, in fasting, in everything, if you have a doubt, ignore it immediately.
Ignore the temptation.
Why? Because it creates this, what you call, a barrier between you and the deceiving shaitan and the whispers that he gives you.
I see. Thank you very much, Brother Yasser. Thank you. Let's take a break by listening to a part of the movie Fatima, produced in 2020. Then we'll be back with his criticism. Don't go away.
Diogo is here with his mother. He can't walk.
He will heal if he starts believing.
Mother, thank you. She says God will heal Diogo. He will heal if he starts believing.
What does that mean? My son is already a believer. He will be healed, but when?
Wait, Benedita.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. We are still criticizing the movie Fatima, directed by Marco Pantecovo, producing 2020. With Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Sayyid Abdullah, the three children go there again to see Virgin Mary, allegedly, along with some people, and it happened again. All right? Although the people didn't see it, but the kids saw the lady again.
Mm-hmm.
She promised to heal a boy that couldn't walk. In fact, people went there for such miracles, right? So miracles play a very important role in the way people come to believe faith. Is miracle a good enough reason to believe such events?
Well, first, we have to define a miracle from a karama. There are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
A miracle is when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends the prophets with something that they do that's unnatural, beyond the natural realm, that to prove their message to people, like bringing the dead, cutting the sea in half, splitting the moon in half, things that no one can do. And karama, like when a person is sick, you pray, or someone who is good enough, he can touch you and he can, you know, give you your health back. So this is karama. So sometimes people, we, through the form of prayer, through the form of having good people, religious people, mystical people, we seek their intervention in trying to give us a cure. So sometimes that works for us. You know what I mean? So with the Ahl Bayt alayhi wasalam, for example, the karamat they perform, which sometimes we mistakenly call them miracles,
mm-hmm.
but the karamat that they perform actually enforces our faith in them. Enforces our beliefs in them. A person comes to the imam and he's sick and he just looks at the dariha and then he, like, within seconds or minutes he gets cured. Well, obviously that not only enforces his faith but enforces the faith of other people as well. So the same thing in the story with this lady, whether it's the Virgin Mary or this lady Fatima salamullah alayha, is the fact that sometimes when they do such action, it does enforce the belief of people in them or in their faith as well. So it does work.
Mm-hmm. I see. Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah. Let's take a short break. and we listen to a part of the movie Fatima, produced in 2020. Then we'll be back with this criticism. Don't go away.
My rivals will use this tale to attack me. I won't risk my position, my ideas, everything I've built from scratch for the inventions of three little children and some stupid superstition.
Some stupid superstitions.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Mohammed Jawad, hosting this program. We are trying to criticize the movie Fatima, produced in 2020, directed by Marco Pantecorvo, with Said Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Brother Yasser, all along this movie Fatima, we see that the mayor is acting like an atheist, all right? He's talking to his wife and calls religion altogether and all the miracles which are performed in the movie as superstition. Why? Is there any border between religion or any kind of cult and superstition? How can we tell?
The line between the two is very thin, because you will have individuals who can do amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
We have that throughout history. You've seen,
and the yogis in India do that properly.
They do some crazy things.
Yes.
They do some crazy. Even the Quran speaks about the magicians at the time of Musa.
Exactly.
So this or not, this or, you know, you have people even today, for example, who can do, what's that?
They may take you for a ride.
They'll do certain things.
Yes, exactly.
They can manipulate the physical world. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. If a person can find how the physical world works,
yes,
they can manipulate it. There's no doubt about it. But the point is, okay, what is the message behind the miracle? What is the message behind that particular the person who's... Because always a cult or message will have a leader. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, right? There must be a particular leader. Who is he? Like, one of the proofs for the religion or for any religion is, who is the leader? What does he want? Does he want any physical... Does he want, political position? Does he want wealth? Does he want, you know, this? Does he want that? Or no, he doesn't want anything but your salvation.
Mm-hmm.
Does he, you know, what is the message behind it? You know, besides that, the one of the things that in Islamic, in any tradition, basically, you have what difference. So here we say religion and cult, or truth and falsehood.
Mm-hmm.
We call it the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's your intellect. Your intellect is something that you have been given in order for you to decipher what is good and what is bad. A human being has that ability to do so. It is something that on the day of judgment will be one of the first things that a person will be asked for. You had intellect. Why did you not use your intellect? And just to end the program, the intellect is in the hadith of Imam Kadhim, a very famous hadith. He said it is a hujjah against you. It is a proof against you.
Mm-hmm.
It is something for you to decipher haq and batil, truth and falsehood. Yes. A religion, a true religion from a false religion. It is your intellect. And hopefully, unfortunately, you know, the intellect of man has kind of descended to his lowest of levels, but it's still there. It still has the ability to kind of, you know, activate itself and find the truth.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Brother Yasser and Said Abdullah, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Fatima, produced in 2020, directed by Marco Pantecorvo. Of course, we haven't finished to criticize the whole movie. And inshallah, and hopefully, we'll do that in the next upcoming episode. Thank you very much for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
World is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
In the United States, the Justice Department has reversed its position on defending Donald Trump in a lawsuit brought by writer E. Jean Carroll, paving the way for a possible trial in January. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. The Justice Department on Tuesday, 11th of July, reversed its position that former President Donald Trump was shielded from a 2019 defamation lawsuit filed by the writer E. Jean Carroll. The government had originally argued that Donald Trump was protected from liability by the Westfall Act because he was acting as a federal employee. Under the Act, federal employees are entitled to absolute immunity from personal lawsuits by conduct occurring within the scope of their employment. Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General Brian Boynton wrote in a letter on Tuesday, 11th of July, to attorneys for Donald Trump and E. Jean Carroll that a jury's determination in a separate civil lawsuit that Donald Trump was liable for sexual abuse and defamation of Carroll factored into the decision. That lawsuit was filed in November of 2022 and involved statements that Donald Trump made after his presidency. The allegations that prompted the statements related to a purely personal incident and alleged sexual assault that occurred decades prior to Donald Trump's presidency, Boynton wrote. That sexual assault was obviously not job-related. Writer E. Jean Carroll filed her first lawsuit in 2019 while Donald Trump was still president, and after he accused her of totally lying when she said he sexually assaulted her in a high-end New York City department store in the 1990s. In October 2021, a federal judge in New York ruled that Donald Trump was not shielded from E. Jean Carroll's lawsuit. In 2022, the Second Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals reversed the lower court's decision and suggested the Westfall Act could protect Donald Trump from liability in the case. The lawsuit has remained active and has yet to go to trial. After the jury found that Donald Trump liable in April, E. Jean Carroll amended the lawsuit, adding a new defamation claims relating to more recent statements made by Donald Trump, and he filed a countersuit. The Justice Department had initially argued that even though the former president made cruel and offensive comments in response to a very serious accusation of sexual assault, the law protecting employees like the president from such a lawsuit should be upheld. But the Justice Department reviewed that decision after the jury in E. Jean Carroll's second lawsuit in New York found Donald Trump liable for sexual abuse and defamation. Boynton wrote, "It concluded that Donald Trump had not acted out of desire to serve the government when he denied her claim." Boynton also cited statements that Donald Trump has made about E. Jean Carroll in the years since his presidency ended. These post-presidency statements, which were not before the department during the original scope certification in this case, tend to undermine the claim that the former president made very similar statements at issue in E. Jean Carroll out of a desire to serve the government, Boynton wrote. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Justice Department has reversed its position on defending Donald Trump in a lawsuit brought by writer E. Jean Carroll, paving the way for a possible trial in January. The department said in a court filing on Tuesday, 11th of July, that it could no longer conclude that Donald Trump was acting in his capacity as President of the United States when he made alleged defamatory statements about E. Jean Carroll in 2019. The former Elle magazine columnist, E. Jean Carroll, alleges that she was sexually assaulted by Donald Trump in a New York department store in 1996, a claim that he dismissed as a complete con job. E. Jean Carroll, 79 years old, has already won a second case against Donald Trump's new comments he made after he left the White House. In May, a New York jury found that Donald Trump was liable for sexual abuse and defamation and ordered him to pay her $5 million in damages. Donald Trump has sought to delay the first defamation lawsuit by claiming that he should be granted immunity because he made the comments while speaking to the media as president. At first, the Justice Department, under Donald Trump and Joe Biden, agreed with that view. But in the filing on Tuesday, 11th of July, U.S. lawyers cited the jury's verdict, Donald Trump's October deposition, and new claims. Carroll has since made that Donald Trump defamed her again with comments he made during a CNN town hall a day after the verdict. They said the new evidence suggested that Donald Trump was motivated by a personal grievance stemming from events that occurred many years prior to Donald Trump's presidency, the New York Times reported. Tuesday's reversal leaves Donald Trump, a 77-year-old, legally exposed to further damages and forced to rely on his own legal team rather than one from the government. Roberta Kaplan, a lawyer for E. Jean Carroll, welcomed the decision. Stephen Chung, a spokesperson for Donald Trump, said the step showed that the Justice Department under Joe Biden was politically weaponizing the justice system against Donald Trump. He dismissed the department's move as a partisan sham. E. Jean Carroll is seeking $10 million in damages in the first lawsuit. A 15 January 2024 trial is scheduled before the U.S. District Judge Lewis Kaplan, who handled the earlier trial. He's not related to the lawyer Roberta Kaplan. Earlier on Tuesday, 11th of July, E. Jean Carroll asked the judge in Manhattan to dismiss a counter-lawsuit by Donald Trump that asserts she defamed him by repeating her claim that he raped her. E. Jean Carroll's lawyers described Trump's counter-lawsuit as his latest effort to spin his trial loss by claiming that she caused him significant harm by implying in a post-trial interview that the assault was also a rape. Lawyers for E. Jean Carroll have accused Donald Trump of springing his counterclaim too late to hold up yet again this otherwise trial-ready, much-delayed case. Donald Trump is again seeking the White House and is the clear frontrunner in the Republicans' primary field.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice.